Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Game Dev Show. Today we're going to be talking about this. This is physics inside of Unity. I'm not inside of Unity, but we're going to be talking about physics inside of Unity, 2D and 3D physics. This is part one of physics. Physics is a pretty long subject. Today we're going to be looking at doing things like rigid bodies and colliders and triggers and what fixed time step is. And then in future episodes, we're going to look at other concepts like ragdolls, kinematic rigid bodies. So make sure you tune in when episode two comes out. But we've got a lot of great stuff. I'm here at the Visual Studio Live Conference in Austin, and I've got some time to have this whole room by myself. You can't see, but there's a whole empty room here. So I thought this is a great place to sit down for a little bit and record you guys some cool content. So hopefully you like it, and let me know if there's any other subjects that you want to see. You can find me online at Adam Tulliper on Twitter. And let's get rolling, because I've got a lot of cool stuff to show you today. For part one in physics, we're going to be talking about rigid bodies, colliders, triggers, and fixed update. And there's a lot of content that we can look at to understand these concepts a little bit better. Now with physics, you have a couple different components for physics interactions. We have rigid body, a collider. Now these are the main components. We do have other physics components. Now recall that a component in Unity is something that you see as a property of a game object. So there are other components that you can use. We're going to be talking first about rigid body and colliders because those make up the vast majority of what you see in the physics realm. Rigid body, I've got this definition off the net. Physics, a rigid body, is an idealization of a solid body in which deformation is neglected. In other words, the distance between any two given points of a rigid body remains constant in time regardless of external forces exerted on it. So think of this solid mass that you're acting upon. And any two points in that body remain constant. It's not flexing, it's not deforming. All right, now let's look at what a rigid body actually is. Inside of Unity, we can set this up super simple. Let's just do a basic collider demo. And on any given surface here, let's get out of 2D mode, all you need to do is create a cube, game object, 3D object cube. And let's move this out so we can see it. Move this up, move this back. Now, when we play our game right now, I'll switch back over to the scene view, click on play. Notice this thing is fixed in space, but it has some physics properties already. We have a box collider on it. And a box collider is simply telling the physics system, now we're in 3D, so this is NVIDIA's physics engine, and that's the green outline here. The box collider basically says, to the physics system, this is the region we're going to use for collisions. It doesn't matter what the object looks like. Your drawing system and the physics system are two unrelated systems. So I can actually make this object invisible, and this will still act like it's an object that has this box shape there. And I just turned off the mesh renderer there, which is actually a pretty good way to have invisible borders in your world, right? You could just take this, skew it out, stick it on the end of the world, make it a high wall that a user can't get over, and turn off its mesh renderer. You now have an invisible wall that the user can't run through. So there's plenty of uses for having these box colliders that just have no visual properties whatsoever. But in our case here, notice we are matching our box collider shape with what our object physically looks like. It doesn't have to be like that, and we'll change that in 1 second here. Let me just scale this guy back down. Let's go back to more of a cube shape. All right. If we want this to suddenly fall, we need to give this object a rigid body component. Now, physics components are all underneath your physics here. When you add component under physics, we're dealing with 3D objects, so it's just a regular physics menu. Specifically, when you deal with 2D objects, and you're going to mess these up at some point in time, I have many times, you're going to deal with physics 2D. Physics, it's a 3D engine out of the box, so you don't need physics 3D. They're just called the physics components here. So we're going to add on a rigid body. This is what gives our object mass out of the box, and we have a drag, angular drag, and most importantly, use gravity. Now this is kinematic here, basically says we are going to remove this object from the physics simulation in the scene. Why would you do that? Well, let's take one step at a time here. I'm going to pause the game, click play, come back to this tab, and we're going to do a frame advance, advance, advance. And now notice, we'll see the contact point happen here. Advance, there we go. Boom, we hit the side of the hill, and now the object is rolling down. And it's not going through our mountain for the most part. It's pretty consistent with being on there. You might get a super mild kind of overlap where the pixels are lining up there, but this is pretty good. And it's acting like a box going down the mountain, right? The movement is box-like. We can change that just to show you how this works, and they really are two separate systems. If I remove the box collider, so you can just right-click and remove component, now this object is going to do something funny. It has a rigid body, so it has mass and understands gravity. But we haven't told the physics engine what this object looks like to it, so really we have no way of colliding with anything. We can pass through anything. So we have mass, but we haven't defined what we look like to the real world from a physics standpoint, not a visual standpoint. So let's go ahead and add on, in this case, a sphere collider. I'm going to make my thing that looks like a box act like a ball. In fact, let's make it act like a small ball, because this is going to demonstrate an important point that we see often in games. Let's take this collider here, and let's change his radius so we have a small ball. Pause it, play it. Advance, advance, advance. Aha, look at that. Now we have just passed into the mountain there, right? But we're acting like, I don't know if you can hear that, but there's thunder going on all around me, because after all, I'm in Texas right now, so there's thunderstorms surrounding. So hopefully the power doesn't go out here, but well, I'm on a laptop, so it probably won't matter too much. So I'm going to frame advance, and notice this is acting like a ball rolling down the hill. So it doesn't matter what the object physically looks like. It depends on how you have declared your collider. Now this is a very common issue that you'll see in games where a player is near a wall and your arm is disappearing between the wall, or the tip of your weapon is disappearing between the wall, or there's an enemy or a plant that's disappearing between the wall. So again, it's all based on the shape of this collider. Now we can hook into these particular events, so every time this hits something, we can get notified in code. So if we go into our scripts folder, although it could be anywhere, we're just going to say create C# script. We'll call this test collide. And let's take the script and we're going to assign it to our game object here. Give it a second to compile. That's why we got the error. It hasn't finished compiling, so it doesn't know about the class. All right, there we go. Let's open up our code, and we're going to use the Visual Studio tools for Unity to be able to tell us to generate our code method for us for on collider enter, on collision enter, on collision exit, and on collision stay. Those are the three events that will get called when we hit an object, when we remain in contact with an object, and when we get out of the collision. So we can actually remove the stuff here, and I'll just right click and say implement mono behavior, or control shift M if you like hotkeys, and I can say OCE, on collision enter, on collision exit, and we'll say OK. And then let me do one more, on collision stay. There we go. There's a method signatures for these particular methods. On collision enter, on collision stay, on collision exit. And so we're just going to do debug.log. And let's see when each of these happen. So I'll paste this in here, just a method name for each one. On collision enter happens when the two objects hit each other. Now, in order to have these events called, their criteria are that, they need colliders because you're having a collision, and one of them, or both, but at least one of them involved in the collision, must have a rigid body component on there. That is a criteria. If they both have just colliders on them, these events won't get called, because really, that's not the real world physics. You're kind of faking your movement. They don't have mass. They're not really colliding with each other. If you just have a collider sitting in space, you have a platform. You don't have a falling platform. You need a rigid body to make things fall and move. Now granted, you can manually move them, you can change your transform, but you're really teleporting objects that way. And that's another key point we're going to talk about when we move objects here. But let's go ahead and see when this code gets called. On collision enter, on collision stay, and on collision exit. I'll go back to Unity, give it a second to compile. Alright, we're going to watch our console window, clear our warnings, click play. And because this is essentially falling down the hill, we're going to see this get noted here quite a bit. Let's collapse our messages. So we have on collision enter and on collision stay. So we are still in contact with the hill. So let's advance. Now we have The reason we have multiple uncollision stays here is when you are actually paused and you frame advanced, these get logged out slightly differently. In other words, this is on collision stay. Notice there's nothing beneath it. This one here has on collision stay, but it says this method was basically called in between. You're doing your toolbar frame advance here, so that's why there's a difference. Okay, so we're falling. Let me just unpause it, and we'll see on collision exit. There we just had an enter. We're hitting, and eventually we're going to come to rest. Let's find our object here. And remember that we have this sphere collider on here, so it's acting actually like a ball. Let's go ahead and we're going to stop this interaction from happening here. There we go. We turned it to kinematic, which basically takes it out of the current physics simulation that's going on. Now notice, if I pick up this object and I were to pick it up and drag it and drop it. Now right now we have no events going on. As soon as I drag this up and drop it again, now we had on collision stay. Notice on collision stay stopped. We've actually fallen down and hit our object. We're still in contact. Why doesn't on collision stay keep getting called? Shouldn't I be notified over and over and again? No. And that is something called a sleeping rigid body. So what is happening right now is, because of performance, once an object stops moving, you get called a couple notifications saying that you are on collision stay. But now it puts the rigid body to sleep for performance. There's no reason to keep doing this over and over again. And you can track this in code. You basically know that you've done an on collision enter. You haven't exited yet. And so you can control behind the scenes a little bit of this process. This is just the default out of the box. Our object is now sleeping. And I have another demo of that where we can see this. How our objects go to sleep. So let me load that up here. All right, this particular simulation here I wrote to basically give you an idea of the number of objects that are in our scene. Green are active rigid bodies. Black are sleeping rigid bodies. So notice as I frame advanced here, advance. And notice we get all these objects that are here. Once they stop, they're falling asleep. They're turning into these sleeping rigid bodies. Let's kind of zoom in over on this side here and let's watch this. Advance. And they're not going to necessarily all go to sleep because some of them might remain teetering a little bit on each other. And then in a second here, we have another layer that's going to fall down and stomp on everything as well. Let's advance. We can see the ones in the back going to sleep, all these ones here turning black. So those have really just only slightly moved. If you ever played those games where you drop a quarter in and you try to push the rest of the quarters off and you're really not affecting the rest of them, that's kind of a visual representation of what's happening here. This is also an interesting performance test that we're going to go back to momentarily here. We have about 1,000 objects in the scene. We can see how we're running at about 70 frames, 65 frames a second. And we're going to come back to this because we're going to look at ways that we could potentially change our performance and alter that. But I just want to show you what a sleeping rigid body looks like when you're not going to get called all the time for all collision stay. Those black objects went to sleep. All right, let's get moving on. All right, so we talked about a collider, and that is the physical region used for collisions. Again, it doesn't matter what your object looks like. It matters what you tell the physics system it looks like based on your collider. There are separate 2D and 3D versions. There's a 2D collider and a 3D collider, and I'll go back and show you that in 1 second here. Again, doesn't matter what the object looks like, and you can have nested colliders that work just fine. We're going to look at this when we look at ragdolls in just a little bit. We have another case called the trigger. But you know what, even before we look at triggers, let's go back and look at some 2D options here under 2D physics. 2D physics is pretty similar. I'm going to go into 2D mode here. I have Yeti. This isn't simply an object. It is a 2D sprite. And in order to take the sprite and create it in your scene, right, we just take it, drag it up, add a rigid body to it, a rigid body 2D. Add a circle collider 2D and make that collider smaller since it's pretty big right now. We can just click on the word radius and drag down. There we go. Now our object is a 2D collider and it will fall and hit any other 2D regardless of what layer it is or really its position, because 2D objects float on a plane. Now, this here, let's go ahead and run this. We've got one of our guys went flying off here. These are just sprites with rigid bodies and circle colliders. They fall. Here's a cube that falls as well. The idea in this demo is, if we scroll back a little bit, you'll notice at what rate do they fall by? Everything is falling at a very similar rate. In fact, there's a really fascinating experiment that you can see on the net where NASA vacuum chamber feather, and there's a bowling ball. Brian Cox visits the world's biggest vacuum chamber. This is a fascinating video. Let me just fast forward to the best part where bowling ball and a feather are dropped at the same rate inside of a vacuum chamber. It's a great video to watch to see everything else associated with it. What's going to happen? What's going to happen? The suspense is killing me. Boom, we learn it from the time that we're kids, but seeing it in action is pretty crazy. They fall at the same rate. And so that's what this demo shows here. We have actually a 2D object and a 3D object. Notice they fall at the same rate. That rate is specified as 9.81 meters per second. And you can find that under Edit, Project Settings, Physics, and Physics 2D. Our 2D physics rate is 9.81 meters per second in the negative Y. In other words, we fall down. For 3D objects, Edit, Project Settings, Physics, we can see that in our Y, we have 9.81, the same in the Y as well, negative 9.81. If you are making a space simulation game and you want things to be affected in different directions, you can add gravity in multiple directions, you can reduce the gravity, so you have control over this. That's what makes the system pretty neat. On the 2D side, this is Box 2D. That is the physics engine that's being used. On the 3D side, again, this is NVIDIA's PhysX engine. All right, so we have our Yeti here, our little guy. He's got a circle collider, 2D, has a rigid body, 2D. Some of our options look a little bit different, and I'm going to go back here and unchange something to show you this demo. Let's go ahead and change this material, and I'll explain what this is in 1 second here. Okay. Let's play. Watch what happens here as we come down on this object. Now notice this one has a little bit shaped differently collider, or a collider of a different shape is a better way of saying that. And we can edit the collider. Let me get a play mode here. We can edit the collider. And this is pretty neat because with the edge collider, we can tell it to snap to various surfaces. We could have added on here a box collider 2D, but this doesn't fit the shape of our platform. Something like an edge collider does, where you basically just come in here, and in fact, I'll even remove it to show you the whole thing, edge collider 2D. With an edge collider, we edit collider, and we just drag it up, change different points, however we want it to be in here, and away we go. There we go. Now, granted, if you jump up, you're not going to hit the bottom of this object, but this edge collider is a pretty good way for these objects that are based like that. There's also, you'll find polygon colliders, more complex shapes. There's also mesh colliders on the 3D side. You always have to keep in performance considerations. So what if you have a complicated zombie, for example? Should that guy have a mesh collider? A mesh collider wraps an entire object for the most part. So if you have a zombie, this will give you a collider roughly around the whole surface of that zombie. Bad idea in almost every scenario. A mesh collider is a performance hog. A box collider, sphere collider, capsule collider are much friendlier for performance. If you have any humanoid shapes, typically you have a capsule collider. Unless they're these big giant bosses, then you might have a capsule collider down the middle of their body and capsule colliders separately on their arms. Think about when you're playing a game and you shoot a zombie in the distance and you only hit the zombie's hand and nothing happens. Well, it's because you're not hitting a collider. That capsule collider is only in the center of the zombie's body. So collider shapes go into this quite a bit. And on this one, we have an edge collider 2D. Now, our Yeti will fall down, and let's make this steep. Let's edit this collider and intentionally make this really steep. Let's pause and play. And let's keep an eye on Yeti here. Fall, 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 fall. Ah, look at that. We fall and we start rotating. That is a problem that you're going to hit early on in learning physics. We want some benefits of physics and not all of them. Clearly, we don't want Yeti to be rolling down the hill like this. So what we can do is on our rigid body component, we can say, okay, don't rotate this object. Now notice, we can only freeze rotation in the Z because this is a 2D object, and 2D objects really, for all intents and purposes, should only be rotating in the Z. Granted, you could use the transform and rotate them in different directions, like you could rotate it in the Y, but that just makes this guy skinny and flips around. If you want to do that, you could, but from a physics standpoint here, we're dealing only with a Z rotation. Z is your depth, so imagine the way I like to think of this is hold your left hand up, it's a left-handed coordinate system, and your thumb goes out to the left, I'm sorry, your thumb goes to the right, your pointer finger is pointing straight up to the ceiling, your middle finger is pointing to the door in front of you. That is a little pin going through the center of the object that we're rotating around. In other words, this is rotating around the Z, and this is rotating around the Y. Imagine a post going in the Y direction straight through the Yeti, and then the other direction left is, of course, X. So we can tell the physics system, do not rotate our Yeti. We don't want you to do that at all. Let me reset my rotation here. Now let's pause this and play this and see what happens when we run. And we fall. We hit our surface, and cool. We've actually stopped there. Now that's fascinating. We can change the rules by which this plays because maybe you want this character to slide down. In that case, your colliders can actually have a material. You can change the way these objects work in real life. And so we can add on what's called a physics material. And to do that, you just right-click on your project here, and you say Create. And there's going to be two types here. And we can look at physics material, physic material, and physics 2D material. Well, we're dealing with 2D, so we want a physics 2D material. I'll specify this, and I'll say low friction. In order to use this, you can drag and drop it or select it from the little circle selector. So drag and drop or use the circle selector. But let's change some properties. We click on our low friction material here, our 2D material. The friction is currently 0.4. Let's say it's at 0. Now let's run this and switch back here. There we go. Now we're sliding down it. And we can dynamically change these properties, change our materials at runtime. What if we want to make this material a little bit bouncy? All right, let's go ahead and increase the bounciness here. That's a huge bounce factor. Our guy just bounced and flew off, whoa, way over there. So we have the power to change this how we want. If we want this to be a high friction material, I think the max is, does it tell us here? No. So let's go ahead and change this to say high friction. And notice our default was pretty high as it was. We weren't sliding down there. But in this case, we're definitely not sliding. We've got a real high friction material. Let's go ahead and even see if we can maybe create this collider up even higher. And let's just see at what point in time we can get our Yeti to slide down this thing. Yeah, that's how high of a friction this material is. Yeti is stuck on the side there. So that works pretty well. All right, so that's a lot to cover, but some basic concepts. Really, let's sum this up here. We have a rigid body makes the object fall. A collider is its shape to the physics system, whether that's 2D or 3D. The 3D physics system is NVIDIA's PhysX system. It's not something that Unity wrote. They use NVIDIA's system. The 2D system is Box 2D. When we fall and we hit an object, and there's collision events that happen in code, one of them must have a rigid body on there. If you don't, it's actually not going to be a falling object. It's going to be a platform stuck in space. This guy right here has an edge collider, not a rigid body. It's a floating platform in space. We talked about the project settings, edit project settings, physics and physics 2D, where we can change our actual gravity values if we wanted to. And lastly, we also looked at freezing the rotation. If we wanted to freeze the X and Y position, we can. We can also do this on our 3D objects, but we get a couple more options. So if we go back to this collider demo and we look at our cube, which had the circle collider in the middle of it here. This is the one we first started out with. You can see the circle shape there. Notice on our 3D rigid bodies, we get different constraints. Freeze position, X, Y, and Z. Rotation, X, Y, and Z. Since these objects are not constrained in just the X and the Y, we can freeze rotation in any direction. So if I wanted this object just to slide, let's freeze that and see what this object does. Look at that. So we're really just stuck on the side here. Now, if we try to maybe find an edge here, there we go. Now we can slide down. But we're not rotating at all. Remember before, the object rolled and rolled and rolled and rolled. We've said this is a pretty special case here, so there is no rotation going on. So we can control those parameters as well. All right, let me save my scene, and let's go on and talk about the next topic here, and that would be triggers. Triggers are awesome. Triggers are a little bit difficult to wrap your head around to begin with. Once you start using them, you'll never confuse them again. They are like a collider, but without the actual physics interactions going on. We usually use triggers to note when something enters a region. So think of a sleeping zombie, and you come within 10 meters of that zombie, and that zombie should wake up. One of the ways that you can do that is through a trigger. Or think of a trap. You walk into a room, and as soon as you cross a certain line, it triggers a trap. Great case for a trigger. You're running along, and you need to pick up a coin when you run over it. Great case for a trigger. The difference between triggers and colliders are that colliders should be used when an actual force needs to take place. One object runs into another object and something physical needs to happen. So when we looked at this example and we saw that an object bounces down a hill, there's a real physical force happening there. You use a collider. If you want to be notified only when it enters the region, you use a trigger. A trigger will not affect the physical world physics. So in other words, if I take this collider and turn it into a trigger, and that's what we do. We literally just go check off is trigger right over here. That takes any collider and turns it into a trigger. And it behaves completely differently now. Let's advance, advance, advance. Come over to our console window. Advance, advance, advance. Notice we have no methods here that were called for on collision enter. So we are now out of the realm because this isn't a real collider anymore. Even though the component is a collider, this is a trigger. And as such, a trigger has different code methods with it. We go back over to our class inside of our test collide, and we bring up Visual Studio Tools for Unity's implement model behaviors. And I say on trigger enter, OTE. On trigger enter, on trigger exit, and let's do on trigger stay. So similar methods, but a different purpose. Let's just copy this out, paste that. And so let's see when these particular methods get called. On trigger exit, and on trigger enter. Okay, come over to Unity, let's let this compile. Inconsistent line endings, that's okay. This is just character return line feed discrepancies. On trigger enter, on trigger stay, and we're sliding. Actually, we're stuck on that mountain, I believe, if I recall. Oh no, I'm sorry. We actually went right through the mountain. We're not stuck on the mountain. See? You got to think about it. What happened when we started here? It falls right through, right? There's nothing stopping it. We have entered the mountain. We were in contact with the mountain's collider and our trigger for 3 frames, and then we exited here. Perfect. And that's actually 3 physics frames that we're processing this on. On trigger stay, we saw will stop when objects stop moving. This one kept moving and passed right through the mountain. It kept going on and on and on. This is not a typical case that we would use a trigger for. Why don't we make this a little bit more realistic? And we can add on an actual trigger to maybe somebody that lands or somebody that comes near it. So why don't we just take this guy and remove the sphere collider, add on a, we'll actually remove our rigid body and we'll just add on a box collider and turn this box collider into a trigger. We are now a floating platform. So let's assume this is a trap of some sort. Let's move this down closer to the surface. So let's put its position at about 1. And let's just move it over here so we can work with it. I'm going to duplicate this object and just move the other one above it. Now, when we run this, neither of them are going to go anywhere. The one that's actually on top here, we're going to make it fall down to the next one. Or actually, I'll tell you what, let's actually move this object over here and let's add on a rigid body. So this object will move. We have a collider on there, a regular collider. So rigid body and collider, so far so good. Now on this object, let's actually make a little bit of a change here. Instead of a box collider, why don't we make a sphere collider? And we're going to make this sphere collider, quite a bit bigger. Why don't we just maybe make it like that? If something comes within the range of this object, we want to be notified in code. This object's not going to fall, so we shouldn't see this on trigger enter and stay being called right now. So we're running our game now. Let's go ahead and take this object and just start moving it closer. And as soon as I enter that realm, let's see what happens here. Now, notice I'm getting on collision enter and on collision stay. Why is that getting called? Well, it's because the guy that I'm moving here has the test collide script. So this cube has a collider. So the on collision enter and on collision stay are being called as I move this around. Now let's move into the realm of this other object. Aha, look at that. So first problem is I'm actually physically interacting with this object here. Notice, I'm not stopping. I am stopping. I can't go through this force field, this invisible force field. That tells me I didn't turn this into a trigger. Sure enough, look at that. Sphere collider, it is not a trigger. Let's try that again as a trigger and see what happens. As a trigger, we now move this object. We get closer, 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 closer. Aha, there's our on trigger enter, on trigger stay. Now we can actually pass right through this object. But maybe we don't want to do that. Maybe we want to say that, hey, as soon as you come within the range of this object, we're going to call this player, the object we're moving, and the object that's over here, we're going to call it force field. And I'm going to take off our test collide script from our player, so it only exists on the force field. Now on our force field, let's go ahead and when on trigger enter gets called, let's find out if the player enters our realm, add a force to repel them. Okay, so we need two things we have to do. One, determine if it's the player, and number two, add a force to the player. All right, first thing we need to do is how do we determine if the player hit us versus somebody else? We can say if the other object, in other words, if the object that just triggered with us. Now, this is a little bit misleading because it says on trigger enter and it passes us collider information. Whereas on collision enter passes us collision information. This took me a while to remember which one's which. And it's really, to me, it's kind of the opposite. So a collider on collision enter gets passed in a collision object. Collision enter, collision object. On trigger enter gets passed kind of the opposite of what you think it would be. You get the collider passed in. That's if you want to write them out by hand. You can always look up the API on the net. I like using the Visual Studio tools for Unity helpers here. They're pretty awesome. So if the other object, now this is not a game object, this is just the collider information. So if the collider of the object that we hit, if it's game object that owns it, has a tag equal to player, then we're going to add a force to the player. In order to do that, pretty simple, we ask for the resulting player's rigid body. So if you want to move another object, you must get its rigid body. That's what you're going to apply the force to. You don't apply force to a collider, you apply it to the rigid body. So we're going to say rigid body We could even call this player rigid body if you want. Is equal to other dot game object dot get component. And you're basically saying, hey player, on your game object, I want your game object to search its list of components down the line and look for one that is a rigid body. So the code for your game object is going to come down, look at all of its components, say, oh, here's one, and it's going to give you a reference to it in code. And this is a very common practice in Unity. Now we have a reference to that rigid body component in code. And we can say player rigid body dot add force, add explosion force, add force at position, we can add a torque. Well, this is a one-time force, this is going to be pretty easy. How do we add a force? We can give it a vector 3. Vector 3 is nothing more than 3 points. So think of, if you want to apply a force, let's look at this arrow here. Even though this is a positional arrow, it'll serve our same purpose. If you want to apply a force in the Y to make an object move up, you make sure that its Y vector has a value. If you want to apply a force so that its X value goes in one direction, you make sure that X vector has a value, and the same thing with Z. So let's assume that we want this object to maybe move up and fly back a little bit. So we would create a new vector 3, and in our vector 3 we'll just pass in some X, Y, and Z component that represents the force we're applying. So in X, this could take a little bit of experimentation, and it depends on the mass of your object. We're just going to say we'll add a force of 5 in the X, and in the Y, let's just say 10. And in the Z, let's just do a 0. Now I added F on here. It's actually optional in this case because they're float values. It won't yell at you right now, but if you start doing something like 5.1, it's going to try to automatically make this a double data type, and it needs to be a float. That's why, it just as a general practice, if I know something takes a float value, so float X, float Y, float Z, I just pass an F on the end of it, regardless of whether it's needed in this case. If we use a pure integer, it just will assume it for you, because it will convert it over to the float. When it compiles it, it won't actually do that for the 5.1 or 5.2. It treats that as a double. That's it. Now, we're missing this part here, because our player is not tagged with player. So let's talk about tags real quick. Our player's game object has this property right here called tag. And Unity gives you a bunch of built-in tags out of the box. And notice there's one called player. We don't have to use it. If we wanted to create our own tag called zombie, we would add a tag called zombie. And then we could come back here and assign a zombie. Oops. Come back here and assign it to that game object after you've created it. Creating it just adds it to the list. Then you need to assign it. But our player is not a zombie. Our player, we're going to use player. These are just common tags. By doing this, it doesn't change anything in the behavior of your game unless you're actually looking for these tags. The only exception to that is, for the most part, main camera. Because main camera is actually a tag that's looked for by Unity. When your game starts, it looks for the first active camera with a tag of main camera, and that happens to be the main camera that's used in your scene. But in this case, we're going to use player. And let's go ahead and play. Alright, let's move this object over. Now this is going to be a little bit tricky, because I'm moving it, I'm literally clicking and dragging, but then a force is going to be applied to it here. Let's see what happens. Maybe snap us here. Now the force wasn't that strong. So, let's see. Alright, let's go ahead and make these values a little bit more. Make them a little bit higher. So we know that we collided with the player. Let's go ahead and just see for sure. Hit player, or I should say triggered by player. And let's make these forces a little bit bigger. Let's do 50, and in the X we'll do 30. Alright, on trigger enter, let's go back to Unity, let this compile. Let's run, and alright, triggered by player. And let's go ahead and actually raise this up and let it drop and see what happens. All right, so we saw that those forces themselves, we can see it had an effect, right? But it's actually not a huge effect. So we could amplify this by some factor. I can just manually make them bigger. I could do 100 by 500, for example. Sometimes it takes some experimentation to find out what a nice force is based on the actual mass of your object. Let's play, and let's try this again here. Take this guy and drag. Oh, whoa. Where did we go? Yeah, we went flying off somewhere here. Whoa. We can see we are still, we're in the X, and we're, that's a huge force. We're actually still flying upwards. Maybe we don't want quite such a big force. Let's just do 100 and 100. And let's run this and see what happens here. All right, let's get close to our object. Bam. There we go. So there's our force field kind of kicked in and moved our object, and it showed us. See if we can't drop. Yeah. So you get all sorts of fun interactions here. All right, cool. So that's a trigger. If you wanted to collect a score, for example, there's something important to note that on the player who doesn't have any code on it currently, let's go ahead and add some code to the player. Player physics. And I created this in the wrong folder. Let's drag this to scripts. And take player physics, drag it onto the player. And let's go ahead and take some of our code and copy it over. Now notice we get this reload here. And that's exactly what we want to look for, because we've just added a new file in Unity. So our C-sharp project has been regenerated by Unity behind the scenes, and it says, hey, there's some changes, so don't ignore that. You need to reload so Visual Studio now knows about this new file. Inconsistent line endings. Unity actually creates them with Linux-type style line endings. And so when you're working in Visual Studio, of course, you get Windows-based line endings. It doesn't cause any problem in your game. It is simply a text editor warning. You can fix it or not. If you don't fix it, you'll see it again. So that's why I just choose to fix it. You should not see it pop up again in the same file after it happens. All right, so let's go ahead and take all of these events here and add that to our physics, our player physics. Player physics start can go away. And let's just enter in our debug log back here again. On trigger enter. So this is all going to run on our player, because we want to see what exactly is going to happen on our player. And so maybe in front of each of these, we'll just add on a P space just to let you know that these are happening on the player. We'll be able to see it in our debug output, but rather than digging into our actual line level detail, let's just run it like this and see what happens. All right, take our player, and let's move our player closer. Okay, it's got a play mode, and let's see what happened here. Notice that on our player, we had all of our collision enters called here, and of course, as we're dragging across our zone here, we were triggered by the player on our enemy, our force field. Our player had on trigger enter called. So even though our player does not have a trigger, our player is a full collider, this method still gets called on our player. So this is an important point to note. When you have a trigger, both objects that have been involved in that trigger interaction, if both of those objects have on trigger enter in their code, they will both be called. That's how that works. Also notice, with other code where you have various methods in there, so take player physics, void do something. Let's let this compile. Let's actually bring back start in here and save that, come back. Notice there's no checkbox here to disable this code. Now we have a checkbox. So by adding a start method here, seemingly our code is disabled. Let's uncheck that and let's see what happens. So our code, quote, should be disabled by what we might think. I move closer to the object. Huh. Look at that. P, all of our player stuff on trigger stay. All of this code in here, even though this object is seemingly disabled, still runs. This physics code, the on collision enter and the on trigger enter, even though you've unchecked it, it all still runs. That's by design. It's something to be aware of. When you disable your code, your physics functions still run. And that is why, if you only have physics functions in your code, you actually won't even see a checkbox to disable it. So that checkbox is only disabling functions like void and update. Notice, we only have physics functions in that code, our checkbox is gone. So something else to be aware of there as well. All right, now with triggers, again, if you run over coins, you can increase the count, for example. So our player, we could say private int counter. And anytime we, let's just say on trigger, let's do on trigger enter, we can just counter plus plus. And we'll say debug dot, actually we'll just add it right on top of here, plus counter dot to string. Now get rid of your debug dot logs while you're testing your game. If you have too many, it actually will have a considerable performance impact on your game, so just something to be aware of as well. All right, let's run this, and we should see our score output here, so to say. Every time we hit an object, this object is just working great here. Let's just drag through this whole area quite a bit. And we can see our on trigger enter, our score here, so to say, is increasing each time. Every time we enter this realm, we increase this. Now the other thing that we could do is, let's say that we enter in our force field, and we're going to destroy this guy as soon as we enter into it. So let's tag our force field with enemy. We could create our own tag called force field. Let's tag our force field with enemy. And in our player code, if other.gameObject.tag is equal to enemy, destroy. Favorite API call of all time. Who are we going to destroy? Other.gameObject. Destroy the game object of the force field. Who we happen to call enemy. So we should only ever be able to do this once for this particular object, because it's going to get destroyed. Let's take our guy, move it over here, boom, all gone. And as such, we only got 1 point. All right, so if we happen to make a bunch of force fields, duplicate those, duplicate those, duplicate those, and now let's run this, we should be able to collect 5, quote, points. Let's move that through here, there we go. And we went flying off, so I'm not going to collect the other one. But there we go. On trigger enter. And we collected some scores for each of them here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And we just never picked up the 6th one. And so there's our 5 points. Perfect. All right, so hopefully that describes triggers a little bit better. Again, if you have like a character running around in your scene, it is perfectly okay to have multiple objects. So we might have this guy, assuming it's a zombie, might have a collider so he doesn't fall through the ground, but also has a trigger for region detection. A very common case that you'll find is the enemy code, your NPC, your non-player character code, doesn't actually activate until something comes within range of it, right? Because that's extra cycles you don't need to process. So you can actually just wait until something comes within this range and then process it. All right, now let's go back and start talking about some more things here. Fixed update. This is one that will make your brain hurt a little bit, but there's some really basic rules behind this. Fixed update, this is where your physics code gets called. So even before we explore this method more in our slide, let's look at what this does for us. Let's say our player, we're going to add a function in here. We're just going to call this fixed update. Say OK. And we're going to do a debug.log fixed update. And then we're going to have something in here like our update method. And in here we're going to debug.log update. These don't need to be public void. Not that it matters in my particular case anyway. All right, debug that log, fix update, update. Now, update runs every frame of your game. So that is the drawing that happens here. Let's go ahead. That's your game loop that happens, you know, however many frames a second that you happen to be running at. If we view our stats here, we're running at roughly 68 times a second. That's getting called at roughly 68 times a second. Now, I didn't see our code, so let's make sure it's not disabled here. I didn't see our output, so let's re-enable this code. Again, when we uncheck it, things like fixed update, our update code doesn't run. Our physics stuff still runs. So there we go. We're updating and we're fixed updating. Notice these numbers, as we're outputting them, are vastly different. We've processed 800 frames so far, and for physics, we've only processed 200 in this case. Now, I've changed in this demo some default values here. Update, again, is tied to every frame. Our physics system runs independent of that and will be called at a different timing scenario. That is our fixed time step. So if we go to Edit, Project Settings, Time, there's a fixed time step here. And the default is 0.02. I've actually changed to 0.08 for a reason that we're going to look at when we look at performance again. So fixed time step. Now let's go ahead and see how this is running. All right, now these numbers are a lot closer to each other, but we're still seeing that update outshines it. That's because we're running at 60 some odd frames a second. Fixed time step is 0.02, which is 50 frames a second. So as time goes on, we've actually processed more updates. All right, big deal. What's the use here? One is used for physics, one is used for drawing. All right, great. What's the rules with that? Let's go ahead and now look at some things in this slide. When you need to apply multiple forces, in other words, forces over time to an object, and typically we're not talking one-time forces, you apply them in fixed update. Because fixed update gets called consistently, 50 times a second for the most part come hell or high water, this is a good area to apply consistent forces like torque and force over time. The physics engine work happens after this call is done. So this is tied to the physics system and is not related to the drawing system. This is ideally where you move a physics related item. Now, you'll see different schools of thought here. And what some folks will say is that if you are moving an object, and you should do it in fixed update. If it is a one-time force, you can do it in update as much as you want. There's varying thoughts on there, and there's some best practices because I've seen that folks will actually use fixed update for performance reasons on certain mobile platforms. But we're going to talk about some general use cases here to not hopefully confuse you to start out. Fixed update, if you want to move an object over time, you can think of fixed update as a good area to do that. If you have a single force you want to apply, you can do that just fine inside of update. But in fixed update, you do not want to read input. So we read input button unitarily by saying input.getButtonDown or input.getAccess. Input.getButtonDown or getKeyDown, that is tied to your update function. In other words, when your update is running every frame, unitarily is saying, is this button held down? Is the mouse button held down or is this key held down? It is tied to update. If you don't read it in update, it's possible you can miss it and actually not detect when the button was held down. So don't read input in fixed update because it is possible that you will miss that input. This is tied to the fixed time step, that value that I just showed you in Edit Project Settings Time. If it's 0.02, this function will get called 50 times a second. 50 times a second. All right, let's look at reading some input and actually moving an object. I'm going to go ahead and create a simple movement script for our player here. So in player physics, inside of fixed update, we need to move an object. In order to move an object, we need to get that object's rigid body. So what we're going to do is on our startup here, let's say void start, and we're going to do the common programming practice of caching a reference to its rigid body. So we're going to create a private variable, rigid body, and we're going to read that in start. We'll say rigid body is equal to get component on this particular game object. Ask for the rigid body, and you shall receive it. Assuming it's there, if not, you're going to get null. However, in this case, I know it's there. Now, in our fixed update, we want to move this object. So let's just say rigidbody.velocity is equal to new vector 3. Now, our velocity is in meters per second. So how fast we want to move in the x, the y, and the z. Well, let me just do 1, 1, 1. This is our, we're going to basically move. The y is going to do us no good because we can't really, this is going to give us an instantaneous velocity of 1 meter per second. So we actually, we're going to be fighting gravity here, but let's see what happens on this. Let's go back to Unity and run this. And we should see our object moving in multiple directions here. There we go. So we are fighting against a little bit of gravity, but we're also moving up and away at 1 meter per second in the x, 1 in the y. And so 154, 55, 56, 57, 25, 26. It actually looks like we're moving a little bit slower here in the y. And same thing in the z. Perfect. Let's actually, I'm kind of curious about something here. I'm going to start off in 1, 1, 1 and run this and see if these values track the same. Yeah, because we're fighting gravity, notice this, as we go over time, our x and our z are the exact same, but now we're fighting gravity in the y, so you notice we're a little bit slower. We're at 6.6. So just something to be aware of. If you try to apply forces going up, you're working against gravity. All right, well, we want to actually read our input and map it here. So read input in on our keyboard, essentially, that we're going to apply to our x and our z. We're not going to move in the y. So let's go ahead and just, we can make this 0. The trick with making this 0, though, is if we make our object 0 in the y, let's go ahead and move this guy up in the air and start. Watch what happens. We get a slow drift. We're fighting again against gravity. Why are we fighting against gravity? Because every physics frame, we are overriding the forces that gravity is putting on this. Now, you get a little bit of a drift built into there, so it's not perfect here. In other words, it's not really stopping the object, but we're fighting against physics. We're basically saying, you know, I want my y velocity to be 0. The physics engine is saying, no, we're trying to apply gravity because you have a rigid body and you have a collider. We want to pull this object down. Well, really, because of the rigid body, the collider doesn't matter there. This object has mass. We want to try to pull it down. So in that case, let's just go ahead and say, you know what, whatever your current y velocity is, dot y, keep it. We're not going to override it. Rigid body dot velocity dot y. Now we should move, we should fall, but we should also see that this object moves in the x and the z by 1 meter per second. There we go. Now we are fighting against friction here, so we can see that we're rolling, we have a couple different interactions here, but we're attempting every frame, every physics frame, we're setting our point in time velocity. So basically, if you could instantaneously speed that object up to 1 meter per second, that's exactly what's happening in this frame. And if the next frame we don't do anything, that object will come to a rest depending on friction and the other forces affecting it. But we actually want to read our input here. So let's go ahead and map this to private float. We're going to call this vertical. Private float horizontal. And private int speed. And this is going to be our kind of little multiplier here. A lot of times I like to make this public, actually, which is why I did a capital to start. So you can change this in the editor for fiddling around. We're going to read in our vertical and our horizontal. So vertical is going to be, oops, not there. We want this in update. In update, we're going to read vertical is equal to get access, and this is going to be vertical. And horizontal is going to be input.getAccess, and we're going to call this horizontal. All right, save that. Now we can just apply that value we're reading in for horizontal in the x and read the value that we're reading in vertical in the z, not the y. We're moving an object across our plane, so that's the x and the z, and we're going to essentially allow whatever our y is, however gravity is working, we're not going to override that. So it's a super basic controller here. Let's run this. All right, I'm going to actually go to this view so we can look at this. And now I'm moving forward. My object's rotating. I can go left, forward, back, right. So that's a real simple controller. The problem is going to be here that if I rotate my object, let's go ahead and rotate this guy to be that direction. Now, if I try to move forward, what happens here? Or move backwards? I'm still moving in an absolute X and an absolute Z position. I'm not moving the way that my character is rotated. And that's important because if we rotate, we want to, and we press forward, we expect to go whatever direction we're rotated in. And we can change that. We can really just say var vector is equal to our new vector there. We can also say rigid body dot velocity is equal to our current transform dot transform direction. And notice that we can say transform direction from local space to world space. We have a couple different things with transform points and transform vector, and we also have transform.translate. So it moves the transform in the direction and distance of translation. Now, we want to move the actual rigid body, so we're not going to call transform translate. And you'll see a lot of code on that does that. I don't like moving an object that has a rigid body via transform.translate. You want to move the rigid body directly. Otherwise, every frame you're teleporting an object and you're not using the physics system to detect collisions. It's possible that you move through it. In fact, we're going to look at a demo of that very shortly here. So transform direction. Which direction do we actually want to go? Let's go ahead and just say vector 3.forward. Let's just assume that we're going to always move forward every frame. Because I just want to show you this to start. In fact, we can even ignore what we're doing here. Every frame, we're going to move forward. What on earth does that mean? This is important to understand when you're creating your own controllers and you're moving your objects through physics, which is always how I recommend you move your objects. All right, here is our player. And notice we're overriding our velocity here, which is why we have this kind of strange value. In other words, we're floating down to Earth again. But let's rotate this object and see what happens. We should always move in the direction that we are rotated. So our object is moving straight along this line. Let's rotate this way. Now we're moving this way. Let's move this way. Now we're moving that way. Perfect. How can we use this for our good, for our benefit? Well, now instead of just moving forward all the time, we can really use this, we can read our input and move in that direction. Transform.forward, I'm sorry, vector3.forward is basically a vector that is just x, y, and z of 0, 0, 1. So we can use this to our benefit. We know that our vertical is always going to be forward or backwards. These input values are only read, either it's 0 if you're not touching your keyboard, negative 1 if you're moving to the left, positive 1 if you're moving to the right. In the case of vertical, it's your up and down keys. So we know that we're only ever going to be negative 1 to 1 for here. And we want to be able to move left and right, which is negative 1 or positive 1 here. So this looks good the way that we have it right now. Nothing wrong with this. We can actually take our vector, and rather than assigning, right, we had this before, that was assigning our velocity, but we're moving in an absolute fashion. Now, transform direction is going to take that vector, which at most is 1, 0, 1, or at the minimum, negative 1, 0, negative 1. That's the maximum range these values will ever have, because that's how reading our input works. If we're not touching our keyboard at all, it's 0, 0, 0. So we're taking those values and making them transform based on how we're rotated. So let's run this, and we should be able to rotate and then continue moving. So let's make sure that the basic use case works, that if I press front, I move front, I go left, moving left and left. All right, so that works good. Now let's go ahead and rotate this object this direction. And let's come back to this view because I can't read input in this view. And let's move forward. And I want to rotate my camera just a little bit, move my camera like that so we can see this a little bit better. Okay, so I can go left and I can go right, and it's based on, you can tell by the angle here, it is based on how I'm moving. But now my forward and my back are getting kind of goofy on me. Let's look at my player. Huh, interesting. I'm moving up in the air. What did I do wrong that I'm moving up in the air? Well, we're now taking our Y and we're essentially changing that to how our object currently is mapped. Let's change this back to 0. We're not transforming anything based on our user and a Y. Let's go ahead and now we only have our X and our Z. So notice we change this because we're using transform direction. All right, but now we get this kind of downside that we've got this kind of slow fall again. Let's let this guy fall down to the surface here, and we'll address that in a second. All right, going into game view, let's move forward, back. Back is still rising me up in the air. Okay, let's see what's going on there. Now, I'm not sure if this was obvious or not, but what's happening here is it's working as designed, but now what's going on? Let's go ahead and fall again, and let's understand what's happening here. Let's go ahead and just drop down to about 1. Okay, we're going to move forward. Let's fix our camera view again, although I should probably do this out of play mode. I'm moving forward. Okay, now I'm moving backwards. I go up in the air. What's going on? Why am I moving in the air? Why is my Y moving up when I'm not even touching my Y? And the key is here is to look at our rotation. We flipped our object when we started moving it, so our orientation is now different. And so when we transform direction, it's basically moving us back, but our object's rotated. So the transform direction is working correctly, but we've rotated our object. So this is a great case where we can go over to our code where we would freeze our rotation and not allow this to freeze to touch our rotation. Now, let's go ahead and see how this reacts for us. Let's go ahead and set this down to 1. And let's go ahead and move. Okay, we're going forward, we're going back. Crank this up a little bit. Perspective. It's all about perspective. All right, we're going left, right, forward, back. That works great. Now, let's rotate our object. And we can actually just go over here and let's do a rotation in the Y. Let's move this way. Okay, I just rotated the Y right there. And now I'm going to move forward. And now we're moving this direction. Back, left, right. So that, to me, works a lot better. If we want to just debug this a little bit, let's change the orientation, parent our camera, drag and drop it on our player. Kind of have a poor man's controller here. So now our camera moves with our player. If we go ahead and let's rotate our player, let's move, let's say this way. We move forward, left, right, right that really is. Perfect. So our rotation code is working great. Now the last thing that we want to look at here is what we were doing with our Y position here. Let's parent our camera to our player, and let's go back and change our rigidbody.velocity.y. And I'm going to change my camera's position here. All right. Let's go ahead and try that again. We're going to lift our player up. Very good. So I just wanted to see how this all fits together. We had a couple things that we had to do to get ready for this, to set this up, and why each thing worked the way it did. Now we're going to rotate in the Y, move forward. If we want to change our speed, we can just change our multiplier, which we're not using yet. So let's go ahead and try to use that. In order to do that, we just multiply by speed. Multiply by speed, and in our vertical, we're going to multiply by speed. Let's go ahead and run this. So we're multiplying our X and our Z by some speed factor. And let's move this camera up. I didn't take into consideration the fact that this object is going to fall to start, so let's make this object right at about 1, and let's take our camera and move the camera up to start. Alright, now we should move a lot faster, so I just wanted to position the camera so when we started out we were correct. There we go. Let's implement rotation, which typically you could read through your mouse. I don't want to rotate my camera, silly. I want to rotate my player in the Y. Let's see how I move now. A lot faster. Perfect. Now if I wanted to say jump, what could I do? I could say, or we could say, if input.get button down, depending on how you wanted to do this. If let's say you just wanted to press the fire button, it would make you jump. You could key the space bar if you wanted to as well. Rigidbody.add force. Which direction? New vector 3. X, Y, and Z. Well, a jump is going to be in the Z. I'm sorry, in the Y. So let's just try a force of 40, or maybe 30, in the F, and 0. So if we have pressed fire 1, go ahead and jump. Game plays, I'm going to press my mouse button, and we can do this repeatedly. See, we're moving a tiny little bit. As we saw earlier, we need to increase this value. I think we used the value of 100 before. There we go. So it's a jump once. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There we go. Simple jump mechanic there as well. Because this is a one-time force, there's no problem doing this inside of update right after we read the input. For movement, we're reading and we're essentially taking our input and we're assigning it to the velocity. And then we made it rotationally sensitive by using transform direction. All right, so that does it for part one of what we're doing for the introduction to physics. I know it's a lot of things, but let's talk about for a second what we did. We looked at using a rigid body to essentially give an object gravity. We give it a collider to understand how that object looks at a physics system. Also, the rigid body gives the object mass as well. Then in code, we can look for on collision enter, exit, and stay. We saw that on collision stay will actually get called a couple times and then stop when that rigid body goes to sleep. Also, we looked at the fixed time step, and what we need to see is how that fixed time step can control the performance in our simulation, which we'll actually look at in part two. But we also looked at using a trigger, and we see that there's on trigger enter, on trigger exit, and on trigger stay. And we've looked at using code to move our rigid body by setting the velocity on the rigid body. Y was a special case because we don't want to override what's happening with gravity there. So we just tell the rigid body just to use whatever your Y gravity is and continue on with our custom X and Z position. Created a little simple controller by dragging the camera onto there, and we moved around. Really basic stuff, also adding a force to an object. I recommend sitting down and trying to code these particular objects yourself. Just be aware that you're not, when you disable an object, you're not disabling the physics in them. Although I did recall seeing in the Unity release notes on a recent version that disabling code would disable that, or maybe it was disabling a game object. Anyway, but we saw that it, actually in practice, when you uncheck code, all those physics functions still run in there, your on trigger enter and your on collision enter. The difference between using a collider and a trigger, if you don't want something to stop another object, then you use a trigger. If you only want like region notification, you use a trigger. If you need an actual physical interaction where you're relying on the physics engine to have two things hit against each other and slide and stop or whatever, then you want to use a collider. With colliders, we saw we can change materials. So we can change the physics material on a collider. We can have a bouncy surface. We looked at it in 2D, but you can also do it in 3D just as well. You create a new physics material or physics 2D material, so you can apply it to either a 2D or 3D collider. Also, we looked at rotation on a rigid body, and that can get us. We saw two different cases. In 2D, we saw our little Yeti guy rolling down the ramp. We didn't want him to roll. And in the case when we were writing our own little custom controller, It flipped our cube, and then it was trying to map, and we're moving up in the air, and it worked totally messed up because we needed to disable rotation for our particular object. So hopefully this was of use to you, and we'll see you again for episode number 2, and we'll see you soon. Thanks again for tuning in. Take care.